Washington, this is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Houthi rebels in Yemen have vowed to fight on as pro-government forces backed by Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates captured the airport of the Red Sea port city of Hodeidah in a week-long offensive. Houthi leader Abdel Malik al-Houthi said most of the coastal area of Tahama is still free. He vowed not to submit or collapse. Fierce battles are reported in the al-Durehimi district outside the city, about 20 kilometers south of the airport. Hodeidah is a vital port for the flow of humanitarian supplies and other imports to the impoverished nation, a growing concern for groups like the World Health Organization. Jenny Musto is an incident manager for that agency. Meanwhile, local hospital sources say nearly 350 people, about half of them rebel fighters, have been killed in the fighting. Thousands of families have fled the combat. The three-year conflict has claimed thousands of lives and created what the UN is calling one of the world's gravest humanitarian crises. Eritrean President Isaias Afwerki is calling Ethiopian peace overtures a positive gesture, and he'll be sending a delegation to the Ethiopian capital of Addis Ababa to ease long-running tensions between the two neighbors. He said 27 years is a long interval. The losses incurred and time wasted are huge. He said Ethiopia is at a turning point. New Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed has pledged to honor the terms of the peace agreement that ended their two-year conflict in 2000, in which tens of thousands are believed to have died. This is VOA News. Under intense political pressure, President Donald Trump Wednesday signed an executive order that requires that illegal immigrant families under detention no longer be separated. The move was welcomed by members of Congress, including Republican Congressman Carlos Cerbello of Florida, who earlier met with Homeland Security Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen. The policy has been widely criticized as inhumane. A day after announcing the U.S. withdrawal from the U.N. Human Rights Council, U.S. U.N. Ambassador Nikki Haley criticized rights groups for preventing efforts to reform the council. A number of groups and nations have lamented the U.S. withdrawal on Tuesday. Haley slammed the 47-member body for being what she called a cesspool of political bias, especially when it comes to Israel. In Zambia, at least 10 miners were killed and several others were injured Wednesday when a copper mine dump collapsed in Kitwe in the country's Copper Belt province, about 400 kilometers north of the capital, Lusaka. It is unclear what caused the collapse, but illegal miners have used explosives to extract copper from the waste dump. The Gambian government Wednesday said it arrested several policemen following violent clashes with protesters Monday that left at least two people dead. Police opened fire on environmental protesters who are opposed to sand mining in Faraba Banta that they claim damages local farmland. Several protesters have also been detained. As OPEC oil ministers prepare to meet for a summit Friday in Vienna, there are reports that Iran may relent and support a small daily production increase amid rising oil prices. Saudi Arabia and non-OPEC producer Russia are pushing for production increases to meet growing global demand. On Wall Street Wednesday, the NASDAQ Composite Index, which tracks the technology sector, hit a new record high close of 7,781 points. Although the benchmark Dow Jones Industrial Index continued its slide amid ongoing global trade tensions. Meanwhile, the chairman of the U.S. Central Bank, Jerome Powell, Wednesday said low unemployment and rising inflation will likely mean continued steady increases in a key interest rate. And a tight supply of available homes and rising prices have led to a second monthly drop of existing home sales in May in the U.S. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa, and welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, and today is Thursday, June the 21st, and here are some of the stories we're covering for you. South Sudanese President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar met Wednesday for their first face-to-face meeting in 2 years. The meeting in Ethiopia's capital Addis Ababa comes amid efforts to end the world's youngest country's nearly five-year civil war. And still in the Horn of Africa, Eritrea's president says that he will send a delegation to Ethiopia to discuss Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed's recent pledge to implement the terms of a peace deal negotiated in 2000. And here in the U.S., World Refugee Day was commemorated by various organizations, including Oxfam, which held an event at the U.S. Capitol.
There's a shared story, there's a shared struggle, and I think that there is a particular connection that, you know, those of us who are refugees, regardless of what country we're coming from or the reason that we have become refugees, there's a connection that we share.
That is Minneapolis State Representative Ilhan Omar, the first Somali-American Muslim person to become a legislator. He's also a former refugee from Somalia. And Uganda's President Yoweri Museveni issues new security measures to control crime and violence in the country.
I have now issued the order in the subcommittee of the National Security Council that all the guns must be fingerprinted to capture the fingerprints of each one of them. That will mean that if any legal gun in Uganda is used, we shall know which gun was used.
Uganda's President Yoweri Museveni and the government of Burundi says that it will not cooperate with the UN Commission of Inquiry to investigate crimes committed in the country since 2015. Those stories and the World Cup update are coming up right here in Daybreak Africa. South Sudan President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar met for their first face-to-face meeting in 2 years. The meeting took place in Ethiopia's capital Addis Ababa amid efforts to end the country's nearly five-year civil war, which has killed tens of thousands of people and forced about 4 million people to flee their homes. South Sudan's government had earlier said that it wanted the meeting between President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar to take place outside the countries of the East Africa bloc, IGAD. And still in the Horn, reports say that Eritrea's president Isaias Afwerki will send a delegation to Ethiopia to discuss Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed's recent pledge to implement the terms of a peace deal negotiated in 2000. President Afwerki announced the overture on Wednesday in Asmara, in his annual Matters Day address. He added that the delegation will also chart out a plan for continuous future actions between the two neighboring countries. Here in the U.S., World Refugee Day was commemorated by various organizations, including Oxfam, which held an event at the U.S. Capitol. The Oxfam event included an interactive session they called Refugee Road, where participants were asked to engage with themes of choice, loss, and uncertainty, all faced by refugees as they escape war and conflict. Their special focus was on Syria. At the event was Minneapolis State Representative Ilhan Omar, the first Somali-American Muslim to become a legislator. She's also a former refugee herself. Representative Omar told me that refugees from different parts of the world often share common stories and experiences.
There is a common theme of what makes someone a refugee, and I think that there's a shared story, there's a shared struggle, and I think that there is a particular connection that, you know, those of us who are refugees, regardless of what country we're coming from or the reason that we have become refugees, there's a connection that we share. And I think, you know, my family was a refugee from Somalia, and I think that, you know, there was a story shared about how Syria used to be a welcoming place where a lot of refugees would go, and there's a lot of my neighbors and you know, community members that were also living in Syria as Somali refugees, and so there's always a connection. There's that world connection around struggle.
And what do you hope to bring to Congress in terms of reform for the U.S. policy on refugees?
Yeah, I mean, like, a voice like mine has never been heard here in Congress, so I, hope to join Congress and bring an urgent voice, a voice that is very fluent on the struggles that refugees are going through around the world, and the hopes and dreams that they have, and insist on having the United States be, you know, the beacon of hope for refugees, and for us to create policies that allow for refugees to be resettled here, for the United States to do its share, and to keep to its fundamental ideals.
Okay. As a former refugee yourself, you know refugees have very little voices. What would you love to see being done right now by Americans or all over the world to mobilize support for refugees?
Refugees are resilient, they're hopeful, and we have a part that we need to do to make sure that we are creating a space for them to get an opportunity to start a new life. And I think that there are, you know, today is a day that we also celebrate the contribution that refugees are making to their new homes.
That is Minneapolis State Representative Ilhan Omar. She's the first Somali American Muslim person to become a legislator in America. I also spoke to Isra Chaka, refugee campaign lead at Oxfam America. She told me that her organization is working with members of civic organizations and various leaders on Capitol Hill to oppose the recent nomination of Ronald Matteson to lead the State Department's Bureau in charge of refugee protections because of what they consider as his hardline stance on immigration.
So this event, Refugee Road, is part of a broader campaign that we've done at Oxfam for World Refugee Day that started with an incredible press conference with Congresswoman Jayapal's office as well as Congressman Liu, and then is now a Refugee Road and also lobbying. We have brought refugees from key states across the country to come here into D.C. and lobby today with a Sister on the Planet ambassador, who are influential women for Oxfam, former congresswomen, former senators, that come together with the refugee to go to their members and say, as a constituents of your state, we demand that you support refugees, but that you also publicly oppose the nomination of Ronald Mortensen to the Refugee Bureau at State Department.
Isra Chaka is the refugee campaign lead at Oxfam America. The plight of immigrants is in the spotlight as the world marks Refugee Day this week. Thousands of asylum seekers cross the border into South Africa each month, fleeing war, persecution, and hunger. But life is not always easier once they enter the South African country. And from Johannesburg, South Africa, Nadia Sami has this story.
Lawyers for Human Rights has used the occasion of World Refugee Day to write an open letter to South African President Cyril Ramaphosa. The organization says the Home Affairs Department employs harmful, unlawful, and cruel practices against asylum seekers and refugees. It's a sentiment shared by leading unionist Zwelinzima Vavi from the South African Federation of Trade Unions. This is his message to Ramaphosa's cabinet.
Treat people with decency, with respect. Don't make them to feel outcast our country. Don't dig your head in the sand when there's clear cases of abuse in Lindelani.
Several civil society organizations gathered at the Lindela Repatriation Center in Johannesburg, a detention site for undocumented immigrants. It's also been subject to allegations of corruption, where some foreign nationals claim they are forced to pay bribes in order to access what should be free government services. Vavi was among the demonstrators at the Lindela Center on World Refugee Day.
Lindelani is now looking more like a concentration camp, not a place where people who have a right to natural justice must be kept. And that's why we supported a demonstration by some civil society formations at Lindelani to highlight the plight of the migrant laborers and migrant workers who are hunted like as if they are animals in the streets of Johannesburg by the police, who throw them there, irrespective of whether it is proof that or not that they are here legally or illegally. And we are absolutely outraged by the manner in which government is really relating to this challenge of in particular Africans migrating here into the tip of the continent, South Africa.
But the Home Affairs Minister insists his department is making inroads in tackling the administrative inefficiencies. Minister Malusi Gigaba says South Africa's new international migration policy presents a new approach to manage irregular and economic migration by creating new visa options and paying special attention to migrants already living within the borders. But in a country where xenophobic attacks still occur regularly, activists are calling on the government to walk the talk and speedily process asylum seekers, who are among the most vulnerable people on the continent. I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg.
The government of Burundi says that it will not cooperate with the UN Commission of Inquiry to investigate crimes committed in the country since 2015. This comes after the UN Rights Commissioner Zaid Raad Al Hussein said that the commission was denied access in the country amid deteriorating human rights situation. Moses Havyarimana has his story.
Since the setup of the International Commission of Inquiry on Burundi in 2016 by the UN Human Rights Council, the government denied access and cooperation with the commission, citing that the commission reports were biased and that it did not consider Burundi government's side of the report. The UN Human Rights High Commissioner Zaid Raad Al Hussein said that, despite Burundi's agreement to cooperate with the team of experts mandated by the council last year, the team was expelled from the country last month and has not been able to return. Martin Nivyabandi is Burundi Human Rights Minister.
That commission of inquiry is not doing its job professionally. We condemn the content of the report, saying that the situation in the Burundi is very deteriorating. We said that they have to show us how they can carry out the investigation, which is the job to be given to ICC. That's why, as government, we don't decide and not to allow the Commission of Inquiry members to come into this jail.
The Human Rights Commission said that Burundi authorities refused to finalize discussions on the renewal of the Memorandum of Understanding with the office. The government closed the UN Human Rights Office pending negotiation on the reopening after the office released a report which indicated major human rights violations in the country in 2016. Jean-Baptiste Baribonekeza is the chairman of the Independent Human Rights Commission in Burundi.
Basically, the current situation of human rights in Burundi is quite stable, so to speak. There is nothing happening that could not happen in any typical country of the world. The investigations and daily monitoring of the situation, we can confidently state. The last major incident that we observed was the attack in Ruhagarika in the Cibitoke province.
Agathon Rwasa is the opposition leader and the deputy speaker of the Burundi parliament.
The violations are common. People are harassed, people are persecuted, people are beaten by these Imbonerakure, people are put to jail for nothing. The government would rather think twice before just reacting and try to change the situation in the country.
Earlier this week, the UN Human Rights High Commissioner said that the human rights situation continues to deteriorate throughout the country and that the government continued restrictions on civic space, and its decision to revise the constitution through a referendum last month have generated a host of human rights concerns. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
Thank you, Moses. And from Burundi, we go to Zimbabwe, where the UN Assistant Secretary General for Political Affairs, Tebrouk Zerihun, says that he hopes Zimbabwe's general election next month will be one that truly reflects the will of the people. For more on this story, we go to Zimbabwe's capital, Harare, where Sebastian Mofu reports.
Visiting Harare, UN Assistant Secretary General for Political Affairs, Tebrouk Zerihun, says he is aware of the issues the opposition had raised regarding the upcoming July 30th election that they want the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission to address.
We met with the head of the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission. We were given a comprehensive briefing, an encouraging briefing, but certainly there are issues to be handled and discussed. And I think there is a positive, in my reading, personal reading, a positive predisposition on the way things are going. But at the end of the day, the UN's normative agenda is to help countries in their efforts to have as inclusive and transparent and free and fair elections as possible, so that the outcome truly reflects the will of the people and therefore is accepted by all.
The UN officials' visit to Zimbabwe came as opposition parties are complaining the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission has not given them the voters' roll. They want to check that list for possible ghost voters, something that has been an issue in the past. Some parties said they failed to register for July 30th polls because of the commission's refusal to hand over the voter registration list. On Wednesday, Jameson Timba, the chief election agent of the main opposition party, the Movement for Democratic Change Alliance, issued a statement saying the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission had, quote, failed to meet its legal and constitutional obligation to provide election materials timely, unquote, including the voters' roll. And he urged the body to apologize to people of Zimbabwe. Earlier this week, Zimbabwe Electoral Commission Chairperson Priscilla Chigumba said, despite complaints from the opposition, quote, nothing short of an earthquake, unquote, would stop the July 30th election, pitting President Emmerson Mnangagwa and 22 other presidential contestants. Opposition parties have long accused the ruling ZANU-PF party of manipulating the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission to ensure victory at the polls. The UN officials' visit provided some assurance that the international community is watching. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
And from Zimbabwe, we go to Uganda, where the country's president, Yoweri Museveni, has issued new security measures to control crime and violence in the country. Addressing parliament on the state of security in the country, Museveni blamed some elements in the police for colluding with criminals. He also says, among others, there will be compulsory fingerprints for all guns in the country, as well as control of social media. From Kampala, Uganda, reporter Mugume Davis Rwakarenji files this report.
While addressing parliament on matters concerning security this Wednesday, President Museveni said having gun fingerprints will help in determining the source of guns used in commission of crimes.
I have now issued the order in the subcommittee of the National Security Council that all the guns must be fingerprinted by firing each gun a number of times in controlled conditions to capture the fingerprints of each one of them. That will mean that if any legal gun in Uganda is used, we shall know which gun was used, and since we know who is carrying which gun, we shall easily know the crime perpetrator.
Several prominent politicians, security personnel, as well as religious clerics have been gunned down in Kampala and neighboring towns in the recent days.
The second measure we intend to introduce is to require every motor vehicle and every pikipiki to have electronic number plates installed at the cost of the owner. Because these number plates which are there now are just a job. They are screwed on, unscrewed, thrown away. They have no meaning.
Most of the murders were committed by people riding on motorcycles. The president recently issued a directive against people riding on motorcycles to wear hoods. He said motorcycle riders should have helmets with illuminated numbers at the front and at the back. The president also said Ugandans should avoid rushing and tampering with the scenes of crime. President Museveni also said they'll provide members of security with modern equipment, including surveillance cameras and drones. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Ruakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
And now for some World Cup update with Samson Omale. Good morning, Samson.
Good morning, Jackson, and welcome to our special coverage of the 2018 World Cup. With the group stage now well underway at the 2018 FIFA World Cup in Russia, the tournament is entering a crucial phase where teams begin to seal progression in the knockout rounds. Africa is not having it any better, as day 7 of the World Cup 2018 was defined by another round of Africa exit, as Portugal defeated a resilient Morocco by a 2-0, while Spain defeated a determined Iranian side 1-0 to keep the tournament from having its first scoreless tie. And after a round of surprises in recent days, order was at least temporarily restored. Uruguay's win ensured that the host Russia will go through to the last 16 from Group A, while Egypt, Saudi Arabia and Morocco were all eliminated from contention after just 2 matches. A look at the statistics shows that in the last 3 World Cups, no player has scored more goals than the 6 that James Rodriguez had in 2014. But after scoring 4 goals in 2 matches, Cristiano Ronaldo is well on the path of making history. And staying with Ronaldo and his country, Portugal, after scoring 13 successive goals from open play at the World Cup, 3 of Portugal's 4 goals at the 2018 FIFA World Cup have been from set pieces. Morocco have lost 7 of their past 9 World Cup matches, failing to score in 5 of those matches. Portugal have not lost against a non-European nation at the World Cup since June 2002, when they lost 1-0 to South Korea. And now to the Super Eagles of Nigeria. Ahead of their Friday's game against Iceland, the Super Eagles have been adjudged as the 29th best of the 32 teams participating at the World Cup after the first round of games. British newspaper The Daily Telegraph, in an appraisal of all teams, rated Nigeria as only better than Saudi Arabia, which lost the opening game of the competition 5-0 to host country Russia, and debutant Panama, who lost 3-0 to Belgium. Action will return to Group C in the FIFA World Cup 2018 in Russia when Denmark face Australia and France will meet Peru. The league kickoff will have Argentina facing Croatia. And that's the latest update from the FIFA 2018 World Cup. I am Samson Omale in Moscow, Russia. It's back to you, Jackson, in Washington.
Thank you very much, Samson. And that's it for this Thursday, June 21st edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, wishing you a very good day, Africa.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, decentralized systems of governments in Africa. In Uganda, it's called decentralization. In Kenya, devolution. In Nigeria and Ethiopia, it's called federalism. The transfer of authority from central to local government on the next Straight Talk Africa at 18:30 UTC.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.